Welcome back to Bywords, a podcast centered on 50 years of knowledge and experiences accumulated in the antiques, collectibles, vintage, retro, and estate business by me, your host, Rich Deakins. This is part four of our series on antique and vintage jewelry. So far, we've discussed how to figure out the metal value found in gold and silver jewelry, and we've looked at stylistic attributes and innovations of the Georgian and Victorian period, with just a hint at what would happen in the Edwardian era. The Edwardian era technically began in 1901 and ended in 1910, but, as we previously discussed, styles do not adhere to strict calendars. Knowing this, much of the style considered quote-unquote Edwardian began making itself known in the 1880s and 1890s. This period was also known as the Belle Epoque or the Beautiful Era. The Edwardian era would be marked by extravagance and florid, excessive ornamentation. The motto of this era seemed to be, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. Or as my dear friend Norma used to say, ostentatiousness isn't just a word, it's a way of life. In styles of decor, furnishings, and jewelry, we are about to encounter a fascinating rubber band effect that first employs newly invented machinery, then rejects newly invented machinery, then celebrates newly invented machinery. The Edwardian period employed the fruits of the industrial era to create and fabricate in bulk incredibly ornate styles of jewelry that formerly would have taken a hand craftsman weeks to complete, one object at a time. While rudimentary by today's standards, these newly invented machines were capable of creating delicate and ornate filigree that again would have taken a hand craftsman weeks to create. This reduction in man hours also brought about a reduction in price and made jewelry much more accessible to those outside the rich and famous. Both the Victorian and later Edwardian era incorporated an abundance of nature themes in their decorations, and that is going to strike you as odd or funny when we arrive at our next stop. You find likenesses of all manner of flowers, trees, shrubs, and animalia present in both Victorian and Edwardian jewelry and furnishings. However, within the intelligentsia, there was a growing distaste for the overly ornate and ostentatious styles that those of this period favored. There was a growing distrust of the fact that handicrafts and hand craftsmen were rapidly disappearing. This caused some to label the Victorian and Edwardian style as quote-unquote artificial and quote-unquote unnatural, focusing too much on ornament and not enough on the art of expression or the utility of use. From that discontent sprang both the aesthetic movement, primarily in Britain and Europe, and the Art Nouveau movement. Both of these movements employed more natural motifs, but with greater restraint than seen in either the Victorian or Edwardian era, of both form and function, with an emphasis on art for the sake of beauty. The proponents of the aestheticism were not only rebelling against Victorian Edwardian styles, but also against what they perceived as outdated moralism and repressive attitudes towards sexuality and the female form. Art Nouveau elevated the use of both the female form, clothed and unclothed, and nature. Art Nouveau also expanded the use of the fluidity that had become popular in the Victorian era. Swoops and curves dominated the Art Nouveau style. One could almost use the term sinuous. Important and prolific influencers of the Art Nouveau era would be Christopher Dresser, William Morris, Oscar Wilde, yes, he lent his words to critiquing decor as well, Louis Comfort Tiffany, Emile Gallet, Louis Majorelle, and many others. I think you can learn more about the styling of Art Nouveau jewelry by studying the lines and form of a Louis Majorelle sideboard or authentic Tiffany lamp than might be learned by studying the articles of jewelry themselves. Some common themes present in Art Nouveau jewelry are insects, Japonisma, a fancy way of saying Japanese influence. Nature, and again, the female form. The Art Nouveau movement, with its rejection of machinery in favor of handcrafts, was about to splinter as the 19th century and the Belle Epoque rolled to a close. It would fracture in two directions. One would take the concept of handcrafting to an even more revered extreme, and the other would flip the rejection of machinery and modernism into a celebration of it. The movement that would come to revere handiwork would become known as the Arts and Crafts or Mission Movement, influenced by craftsmen such as Gustav Stickley and Dirk van Erp. This movement would follow most closely behind the Art Nouveau movement as it being birthed by it and from it. As Elbert Hubbard, the founder of the Roycrofters, a powerful force in the arts and crafts movement, once said, "Have nothing in your home that you do not believe to be beautiful or know to be useful." Arts and crafts artisans believed that the materials used in furnishings, decor, and jewelry was the decoration, and additions were unnecessary. Pay attention to form and proportion, and no further decoration was needed, save for a tasteful nod to nature. Copper, pewter, bronze, and silver were favored mediums for arts and crafts era jewelers as they seemed earthier and less ostentatious than gold. Stones were often cut into smooth cabochons, ovals with a smooth, rounded top, and again, this was less ostentatious than sparkly, faceted stones. On the other side of the spectrum was a movement that embraced the machine era, geometry, futurism, and the glamour of a newly birthed but highly influential factor in global society, Hollywood. This movement would come to be known as the Art Deco movement, and we'll take a closer look at jewelry from that period in our next episode. Until then, keep hunting, keep hoping, keep learning, and keep history alive.